serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 93-year-old Bill Mills of Modesto, California, originally from Wister, Oklahoma, and a Navy veteran of World War II. We heard about Bill's ship, the seaplane tender USS Curtis, being struck by a Japanese kamikaze off of Okinawa in June 1945. 35 of his shipmates were killed, quite a few more wounded. But it could have been much, much worse. Somehow, the bomb stowed below deck barely avoided being detonated. Stores of ammunition weren't set off either. And as Bill was down below, shifting fluid from one side to the other in the boiler room to help keep the ship afloat, four other ships came to the Curtis's rescue to fight the fire covering parts of four decks. These other ships, by coming to your aid, were risking themselves. All those guys were risking their own lives.
Right. Because we could have had an explosion in there any time, you know, and they were gone too, so.
Yeah, not only was it miraculous that the Japanese bomb didn't set off your bombs, but these fires are still burning. They could set off all kinds of stuff.
Right, that's what it'd be.
And where that Japanese plane, where the damage stopped, was four decks down. Are you right below that?
Yeah, I guess I was just below it. I was at the bottom point, really. Just the bilge is all left underneath me, so.
So if it had come down a little further, it blows you and everything up.
Yeah, it would.
And this fire's going for a while. Did you see any of that fire or the smoke?
No, I didn't. Like I say, I was in my battle station in the boiler room. I am glad I didn't see it.
And your commanding officer credits the whole ship with saving the ship. That means you. What you were doing down there in the boiler room helped save the ship.
Yeah, I suppose.
I think that's a pretty big deal. So for the last 72 years, this is something that happened in your life that came close in a number of ways to ending your life. That's fair to say, right?
It is.
How often have you thought about that over all these years?
Not too much. I mean, I figured, well, I made it, so why worry about it now?
You came home, you got married, you had a couple kids, now you have grandkids, great-grandkids. You worked 39 years for a cold storage company. Was that because you're tired of the heat down in the boiler room, or what?
You know, when everybody got discharged at that time, while you worked at whatever you could find, I was lucky that I could find a steady job, because a lot of people couldn't. So I found this little refrigeration plant that, when it started out, it was a ice plant. They were making these 300-pound blocks of ice. There's reefer cars that they ship fruit
On the railroad, yeah.
On the railroad. That's before they had the refrigerated cars.
Yeah.
So it was an ice bunker on each end, and they'd run these 300-pound blocks of ice up there and put them down in this thing. And then this same company built a warehouse, a cold storage warehouse, and so I just grew along with them.
So what did you prefer, 120 degrees in the boiler room or shivering in the cold storage?
I'll take the cold storage.
Nobody's shooting at you there, huh?
Yeah, right. And you can dress a little heavier.
I guess so. Well, and like I say, so none of that, all those memories you have from that long career, your kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, you never even would have met your wife if things had gone a little differently on June 21st of 1945. How do you explain that? What do you make of that?
That's life, I guess. Some people weren't so lucky, so a lot of people died.
You know, the war wasn't over the next day. You guys have all these ships come to your aid. They help you out. You got another 2 months before the war ends.
Yeah.
Was it different after that? Were you more anxious or nervous because of what had happened?
No, not really. After we got underway, you know, got patched up, we went to Guam, and they went in dry dock for a few days, and we got to go to rest camps for 3 or 4 days. Then we limped back to the States, and Mare Island, and they did a repair job, and we were back out. I think we're in the States 2 months, I believe.
Yeah, the war ends, and you end up having to go back out there, all the way to China.
Right.
But what about the end of the war? Did you have a chance to celebrate VJ Day and the fact that this enemy that almost took your life had now surrendered?
Oh, yeah. I could start to enjoy it a little bit and enjoy the different places I'd see.
Yeah, what did you guys see after the war was over and you went back out to sea? What are some of the things you remember?
Oh, I remember Shanghai especially. At Christmas time, In 45, we were in Shanghai, China.
Uh-huh.
Going ashore there, and these rickshaw boys fighting over which one's going to get the fare. Got to haul you around.
Uh-huh.
All these little kids running around begging, you know, and stuff like that. So I was anxious at that time to get out. I think we went to Shanghai two different times. The second time we went there, I transferred to another ship, a merchant marine ship, the Phoenix.
All
and
right.
Then shipped in to Seattle.
Is there anything about your time in the Navy that I haven't asked you about that you think is important for people to know?
I would have enjoyed it under different circumstances. In other words, the last cruise out, why, that was an adventure. One thing I regret, my ship went into Tokyo Harbor. I rated Liberty and I could have gone ashore, but I didn't want to. I regret it now. I didn't want to see them. I didn't want to face them or something.
Why was it you were so upset with Japan? Was it just that they had started this in the first place, or that they had hit your ship?
I think so, and all the buddies that had died, you know, and all that stuff. So I didn't have a good feeling for them. I was finished.
And when you got out of the Navy and you came back and you went to work, was it hard to make that adjustment from being on a ship with a bunch of greasy guys all the time to living in this real world in California?
Yeah, a little bit. Had to watch your language a little bit. Because you've been there with only 3 years with the guys, you know. It was different. For a while, you kind of have to learn how to walk again because you're waiting for the ship to roll.
You find yourself tripping on level ground?
Right.
Well, as long as your feet don't fall asleep when you jump off the mushroom van.
Right.
Huh? How about any run-ins with famous names during World War II?
I saw Bob Hope show a time or two. In fact, I think Bob Hope and some of his party stayed overnight on our ship one time. Anyway, we went ashore for his show.
I bet that was a big crowd.
It was a big crowd.
That's when the Navy and the Army and the Marines all get along?
Right.
And what did that do for you, to get away from all these constant general quarters to sitting there and laughing at Bob Hope and these folks who are risking their lives by being out there?
Oh, yeah, that was something. I mean, that like gave you a fresh start, something else to think about.
The other name I've got to ask you about, Tokyo Rose.
Oh, we heard Tokyo Rose quite a bit.
What kind of stuff did she say?
Oh, she's just telling you what all you should do and what they were going to do to you and all that kind of stuff. I don't remember she ever said Curtis or not, but probably so, because she was picking out different ships at times. So.
Uh-huh. Was that something that spooked you or made you laugh or what?
Oh, I guess you just kind of laughed at it because you knew what it was.
And you said earlier that, you know, for decades you really didn't think about this, didn't talk about it. But you had an experience recently that I imagine brought some of that coming back. When you went with a bunch of other veterans from here in California to Washington, D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight to visit the World War II Memorial and other spots. Tell me about that trip. What stood out for you?
Well, I thought it was great, but I just feel like I was being treated as a hero, and I wasn't a hero. You know, I just did my job.
Well, if you hadn't done your job as well as you did it, there might have been more guys who didn't come home.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it.
Including you.
including me.
What were the things about that trip, the things that happened on that trip, that made you feel that way, that they were seeing you in that light?
Everything, I guess. I mean, there was someone waiting on you, taking care of you. You didn't have to. And then a lot of these places I would have never seen, you know. So I really appreciate it.
You had a few people that wanted to shake your hand?
My hand hasn't rested up yet.
What do they say to you?
Most of them say thanks, you know, and stuff like that. When I came back into Fresno, there's some of those ladies were even crying, you know, as they had tears in their eyes as they'd shake your hand. So I thought that was something.
I bet they did more than shake your hand. I bet you got a few kisses on the cheeks.
I did. That was a highlight.
And I bet you had a whole lot of your family waiting for you.
Yep, that's for sure. That was great.
And the band playing and people waving red, white, and blue and cheering for you.
Yeah, and the way the traffic gave you the right-of-way on the buses and stuff like that, that was amazing.
You know, I've had a lot of veterans tell me that. One of the things they're most impressed by was having a police escort around Washington, D.C.
Yeah, that impressed me, for sure.
Make you feel like you're somebody.
Right. Maybe I am a hero.
I think there's a lot of people that would say that. And I asked you earlier about getting mail from home. Did you get some mail on that flight? Did they hand you some letters on the way home?
Oh, yeah, that was something. Wasn't those kids? That brought tears to my eyes, you know, that they'd go to all that trouble.
people you've never met before are writing you letters and saying
right.
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And what about being there in Washington? I know you saw a lot of things. You saw the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and you saw all the names on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall, the haunting Korean War Memorial, and those soldiers marching through the rice paddy. But what about being at the World War II Memorial and taking all that in? Here you've got a pillar for Oklahoma, your native state, and one for California, the state that you've lived in for all these years. And then there's that wall of gold stars. 406,000 Americans were killed in World War II. What did you think about while you were looking at that?
I was just thinking it was a big waste, and hope we don't have to do it again.
Did the thought enter your mind how close you came to being part of one of those stars?
No, not really. I guess I figured I made it, so why worry about it now, so, or something.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm just curious, too, if while looking at that big wall of gold stars, and it says underneath, here we mark the price of freedom. Did your mind go to any of the people you knew who died in World War II?
Just the crew, mostly, my ship.
Yeah, 36 guys who were killed with that kamikaze.
Yeah, and the Pearl Harbor, too. I mean, the Pearl Harbor, that bothers me, the Pearl Harbor.
Because it was a surprise attack?
Yeah.
Do you remember feeling that before you went in the service?
Yeah, I was ready to go back and pay for it.
I know it was a long way away at the opposite end of the war, but the way the Curtis was hit on December 7th was very similar to the way it was hit on June 21st, 1945. A Japanese plane with a bomb crashing into the ship.
That's right.
And who knows how close you were to being entombed in the boiler room of the Curtis.
Oh, yeah. Or he could have hit by the boiler room, so.
You would have never known what hit you.
I'd never known.
Well, I don't want to belabor that point, but I do want to join all those people who shook your hand on the honor flight and said, thank you for serving our country. Thank you also for telling us a little bit about it. Is there something that you'd say, you know, most of us alive today weren't alive during World War II. We didn't hear about Pearl Harbor on the radio. We didn't go through rationing. We certainly didn't go overseas and get shot at or get kamikaze'd off of Okinawa. What do you think is important for us to understand today about what happened then and what all you guys went through and why you did what you did?
Just hope it don't happen again, I guess.
Do you think America was different then than it is now?
Well, I think so. I don't think America would do that now. I don't think they'd come together like they did in World War II. People are too divided in opinions.
You said something a little while ago. Who do you see as the heroes of World War II?
Well, actually, I see the heroes as the guys that are out there in front with the Marines and the attacks. That's the heroes. That's where you're going in face to face with these guys. To me, they're heroes.
Last question I have, unless there's other things that you want to say. What would you say you're most proud of?
Most proud that I went through and did my part. I've always been a hard worker, you know, and had a job to do, but I did it. So there was some kids on there that would fight the system, you know, and they had it rough. I figured, well, you go along with it and do the best you can.
I'm sure we can all find the occasion to follow Bill's example in that regard. Bill Mills, now 93 years old, of Modesto, California. Don't forget to see that video of his World War II log or the photos of Bill at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And join us again next time as we're reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.